This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Neil Reynolds Podcast. This is episode 20 of our current season. So if you're new to us and just discovering the podcast, please do go back through our archive. We've got over 50 episodes with players, coaches, media personalities, general managers, all reliving their NFL and football life stories. We've delivered tales of success and failure and hard work and the grind that it takes to get to the top. And this time out is no different as I speak with Dante Hall, a player who forced his way into the reckoning with the Kansas City Chiefs via a stint in NFL Europe with the Scottish Claymores. As with most of my conversations, I spoke with Dante about the grit and determination he's shown in his life to make it to the very top. I've also been working with him recently on Sky Sports, so I can tell you firsthand what a nice guy he is. And as you'll hear from this chat, the adage that nice guys finish last doesn't apply to Dante Hall. So if you want to watch this episode, head over to NFLGamePass.com, where every episode from season 2 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast is available to watch right now. And if you like what you hear or watch, then please tell a friend and leave us a 5-star review wherever you're listening. So let's get to my chat with Dante Hall. It's been great to have you on Sky Sports. Really enjoying working with you. I think you're a fantastic analyst, and you can just love the game, right? You just tell
I really you just do, love man. It. I love sports. I love all sports. Obviously, I love football, but it's a passion of mine that I don't think is ever going away.
Was it football for you growing up? I mean, can you remember, like, as a kid, always playing in the backyard, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. From the time I can remember, football has always been an important part of my life. Even just as a kid going out in the backyard, you know, I didn't grow up with all of this social media, all these gadgets and tech. You had to go outside for entertainment. So football was one of the main ways.
Where did you grow up? Tell us a little bit about growing up and when you started playing football, yes.
So I first grew up in Lufkin, Texas, which is about 90 miles east of Houston. I grew up, my grandmother raised my brother and my sister and I while my mom got her onto her feet. So we was with my grandmother in a little country town, a little small town. And if you know anything about small towns, that's where the toughest people are. City boys, you know, they're tough. The country boys, woo-hoo. So I feel like that really helped prep me for anything in life growing up in the beginning in the country. And then I moved to Houston around 9-10 years old, became a city boy.
Don't they always say country strong? Isn't that what they describe?
Country strong, yes. It's a real thing. It's a real thing.
So did you play, start when you started playing football? Where was that, high school or was that before that? Were you younger?
So I played all sports, really. And a fun fact for you, growing up, basketball was my favorite sport. But the neighborhoods I lived in, we played basketball during basketball season, football during football season, and baseball. And we pretty much played all the sports. I first started playing organized sports in middle school, which I don't know if you guys call it junior high, what, but that's around 7th, 8th grade. And that was the first time I played organized football. And we had a thing called the A team and the B team. And this is important because this was a common theme throughout my career. I always had to prove myself. So the A team was a team with supposedly the better players. And the B team was more, I guess you can call it, the subpar team, the developmental team, whatever you want to call it. So I started on the B team in 7th grade as a quarterback, believe it or not.
Wow, a quarterback. Running quarterback.
Of course. Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson. And exactly. They quickly realized we probably better have this guy hand the ball to this guy opposed to him handing and throwing it. So that lasted about 3 weeks.
Yeah. And then when you went through your, sorry, I did mute. So people who are watching, I did mute myself then because this is what happens in the work from home life, Dante.
My dog was barking.
Was barking. There was a delivery coming. It's getting close to Christmas. So it was all going on while you were answering. But I promise you, I was listening. I heard that you were up against it. You were on the B team. You didn't end up on the B team, as we're going to discover as we go through your career. So college football, high school, was it running back for you, wasn't it? Because obviously we remember you as a return man and a wide receiver with the Chiefs, which we'll get to. But you started out as a running back, right?
Yeah, I was running back. Once they discovered that I was no good at quarterback, they moved me to running back, which propelled me to the A-team immediately once they put me in the right position. And from the seventh grade all the way through my second year, until I got to Scotland that I became a return man receiver primarily. Before that, yes, it was all running back.
And so let's go through. So you played college football, then you're drafted in the fifth round. Was the draft a kind of nerve-wracking experience for you, or were you kind of where were you expecting to go? Was it all? Did you fall right about where you wanted to, or was it frustrating?
So we got to go back to college to address my nerve-wracking experience on draft day, because in college, my freshman year, pretty good year, made freshman freshman of the year honors. My second year, I became a full-time starter, beat out some really good running backs. And then my junior year was my best year. And at that time, I was projected to go second or third round. But I kind of wanted to make mom happy, finish my degree. And we had a pretty good, solid team coming back my senior year. So I really felt like we could win a championship. So instead of leaving for the draft early, I feel like I could increase my stock, make mom happy by completing my degree, and potentially compete for a national championship. None of that happened. It all went to poop, we should say.
Into my dogs.
Yeah. So I ended up getting hurt. So I only played in maybe three or four games. My draft stock failed not only because of my injuries, but I also ended up being dismissed from the team at the end of the year because of an argument in front of the team with the head coach at the time. So, and I didn't finish my degree. So my plan going into my senior year all fell apart. So yes, that leads me to my experience on draft day. I didn't know if I was going to get drafted at all. I didn't know what was in stock because of the year that had happened. So very nerve-wracking. My mom invites pretty much everybody in the family. Every friend she had at work is a huge party. And I'm sitting here like, this could be disastrous and very embarrassing.
Wow. Was it a costly argument? Do you think back now and think about that argument and think, man, I should have bit my lip, or are you glad you said what you had to say?
No, I should have bit my lip. Should have bit my lip. I was immature at the time. Didn't know how to suppress this attitude that I have, that I use on the field well. But at the time, I wasn't mature enough. And I didn't realize, too, until I got older, had some counseling. I didn't realize I was dealing with a lot of off-field things. I had a lot of deaths. My dad died. Grandmothers died. A lot of people that were important to me passed away. Things were going on with, like I said, my football career. I got hurt also in high school. My senior year, I get hurt in college. So a lot of these things, there was a lot going on. And I didn't realize that it wasn't normal for a kid to be dealing with this off the field. So I didn't handle the things properly in a mature way. So yes, in hindsight, Neil, I would have bit my tongue. It wasn't that big of a deal. And it happened. It's part of my story. It is what it is.
So how did you react as a young player again? So, I know you now. I don't know how you were when you first started playing. And like you say, you're dealing with a lot. How did you react when you were allocated to NFL Europe? Because some guys loved it and some guys learned to love it, but maybe at the start were like, oh, why are you sending me over there? How did you react when the Chiefs said, you're going to Europe?
I honestly thought Coach Vermeil at the time was doing, I have to say this first. You have to understand, I'm coming off the situation my senior year in college, right? I'm already not trusting coaches. So then I get to the NFL and it's like, whoa, just because you're drafted, there's the coach that I had at the time, I felt like wasn't in my corner, really didn't want to draft me. I understand the process that there are so many other guys, like the special teams coach, maybe a personnel guy that loved me, but the head coach didn't love me. And I could sense that. I could feel that. Got into a fisticuff with my head coach, my rookie year. So you have to understand all of that to understand when he, Coach Vermeer first calls me and tells me you're going to be allocated to this Claymores. I'm not trusting them at all. I'm thinking it's some shady snake way of they're going to release me. Like, what do you mean you want me to go to Scotland and learn to be a receiver? Never played receiver in my life. And at the highest level, you want me to try to make the team in this way? So I was very apprehensive in the beginning, but I really didn't have a choice. It turns out to be one of the best things that ever happened to me on and off the field. It's crazy how life works.
Yeah, it really is. And that's why I didn't know that was the thought process, but I knew a lot of, I told you this before, I worked in NFL Europe. I knew a lot of the players, some felt they were forced into it and then grew to love it. And now when you talk to them afterwards, it was like, well, yeah, it changed everything, you know, and it did change players' lives. You probably got used to a lot of cold sideways rain coming in during practices up in Scotland. That would test your mettle.
Yes, it will. And it also, like I said, it helped, it benefited me because you play a lot of those style games in the back end of the NFL season. So for me, going through practices in the UK and Glasgow, Scotland, sideways rain, cloudy, rainy every day. Yeah, it definitely chiseled me up and made me a tougher man for sure.
I bumped into your quarterback a couple of years ago, Clint Sterner, who was the Clint quarterback. Sterner. He's doing media in the Houston area now. So I saw him.
I thought he was with Arkansas. Is he working with Arkansas?
Oh, maybe he is now. I saw him a couple of years ago. Yeah. So, then when you transition back into the NFL, and obviously you're trying to make that impact on special teams, I know this from speaking to players, that first year back after NFL Europe, that can be quite tough, can't it? Because NFL Europe season doesn't finish till the middle of June.
Yeah, when I came back, I literally had 2 weeks before we went to training camp. And the training camp that I went to, just go through your history and your research on Dick Vermeil's training camp style. It's the hardest training camp you could ever experience. He's old school. He's all about practicing, developing the young guys, which makes practice 3.5 hours. You're in pads the majority of the time. So I not only finish a season and then 2 weeks later have to go to training camp, but it's a Dick Vermeil training camp. I hit the rookie wall twice. I'm in my second year and I hit the rookie wall twice. It was unbelievable.
Did you feel like you came back from almost immediately though? Like as you're going through that training camp, did you feel a more confident player or a different player from the one who was sent to Scotland?
Not at that point. No, I can't say I did. I definitely benefited, but at the time, confidence is the word you use. I still hadn't had my confidence. I definitely benefited from the practice and it showed up during training camp and in the games, but the confidence was still not there. No.
When did that come?
That came from two things. One, three things. Beating out a guy that was ahead of me as far as being a receiver, because the thing was, naturally, with the ball in my hand, I was okay with that. It was the receiver part. And coach had told me, you can't make the team as just a returner. You have to go to Scotland, learn to be a receiver, come back and make the team as a receiver. So when I beat out a guy that was ahead of me as a receiver to make the team, that was the first time. And then the second thing was I started to have better success on the field. And then the third thing was once Coach Vermeil instilled confidence in me, that he had from himself. Those three things was a gradual process to me finally having confidence in myself.
You went back-to-back Pro Bowls 2002, 2003. I think I told you this as well. I was writing all of the sort of press release type things on NFL Europe guys. When you were in the league, I was on the panel that did the Player of the Week. And then one of my jobs after players left the league was to highlight what they did every Sunday in the NFL. Around that time, the first port of call was to go to the game book for the Kansas City Chiefs to see what Dante Hall did, because it was you were making plays, you know, week in and week out. Talk me through that 2002 season, you know, quickly, just again, making your first Pro Bowl. Is that when you're then starting to, that's growing, that confidence? And is that then, does it start off as a kind of intangible, but then become a kind of physical thing that it manifests itself in the way you play?
Absolutely, Neil. So yes, the 2002 season was a season that everything really took off. I started playing on offense more than I had the first 2 years in 2000, 2001. And because of that, being implemented into the offense, I truly believe started to help me have success in what they originally drafted me for. And that was to be a return specialist. But I had my first success, crazy or not, as a receiver. And because of that success, I'm in the game more. Now I can have a feel for the game more. Now all of a sudden my special teams play improved. And once I broke my first return, it took me about 2.5 years or 2.5 seasons to finally have success. But I think it went hand in hand with the success as an offensive player, as a receiver. And then the special team success had started to happen. And then when I got nominated to my first Pro Bowl, that also led to me getting a new contract. And that combination right there, woo, the confidence soared. And from that point, now I can really show my style of play. A risk taker, maybe going outside the box, breaking, you know, certain rules. Because you have that contract and they give you that signing bonus. I was aware that, oh, they can't just cut me now.
Like, they got to do it. You had room for error.
I have room for error. There you go. Exactly.
2003 season, you score on 4 returns in 4 straight games. Now, just going to take our viewers and listeners here behind the curtain. We're watching the games on Sky Sports on Sunday nights together. And Kenny Nwangu scores for the Minnesota Vikings. You felt he didn't celebrate enough. And one of the things you said to me, the phrase you used to me, which really stuck in my head, you said, "You're not going to get there that many times, Kenny. Make sure you enjoy it." So bearing in mind how rare it is, did you know you were in kind of a historic run of form there with 4 returns in 4 games for touchdowns?
It wasn't until week 3 or the 3rd return that I realized, because, you know, guys can go back to back. But then when I did 3 in a row, Deion Sanders, who was one of my favorite football players growing up, he comes down to interview me prior to the Denver game. That's when it really set in, like, oh, I'm on a historical pace. I got Deion Sanders personally coming to want to chat with me and talk. It was at that point after the 3rd return that I'm like, oh, history is on the line now.
You've probably seen me scribbling away. As you say stuff, I'm just thinking of fascinating things to me. So with your return style, how much of it was natural and how much of it is coached? And if there are coached bits, which are the elements that are coached, or how much are you just relying on natural ability back there?
It's definitely not natural ability, not at that level. That happens in high school, perhaps college.
Right.
At the NFL level, no. There's a lot of mechanics. I definitely benefited from not only Coach Ramil basically putting an emphasis on special teams. It was the first time, because my rookie year, there was no emphasis. Practice was like 1.5 hours. It was all about get through practice, get out, right? Tempo. Coach Ramil, who comes from being a special teams coach himself, appreciated, understood the importance of it,
right.
And he made us practice it. So I definitely benefited from coaching and the emphasis, but also the schemes. My rookie year, we ran a man scheme, basically a man-on-man. And that really wasn't good for me, because if you didn't have good personnel, good blocking, the schemes would break down and now I'm having to shake way too many guys. Coach comes in with a new special teams guy and we started running wall returns, left, right, and middle. And then we would run break-ins. So I won't get into the technicalities of all of that, but basically the schematics, the scheme of the coaching put me into a situation to then I can use my natural abilities and it could manifest themselves then. So it was a combination of first, the schemes had to be right, the emphasis and the focus of special teams and the importance of it had to be there. That allowed my natural ability to be showcased.
We'll be back with more from Dante Hall after this break.
This is Jack Crawford and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Hello, Neil. I'm early in the show again. It's Gary.
Gary, you love this bit, don't you?
Oh, it's my favourite part. Now we started doing this, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm getting there early.
Extra Gary time.
Well, I've got a question for you, actually, because we're going to go to the mailbag after you finish the conversation with Dante. But question for you is, what time of year is it, Neil? It's the most wonderful time of the year, sort of. We're in December. Christmas is around the corner. That means a lot of stuff happening with the NFL, and it's that means a lot of stuff happening on Game Pass.
Time, absolutely, of the year. Yeah, no, it is a good time, and it's, you know, we're at the business end. I love this, but we're at the business end of the season. Divisional matchups are going to be huge. You know, there'll be a lot of those you can check out on Game Pass. You know, the Ravens and the Browns, the Raiders and the Chiefs coming up very soon. The Bears and the Packers. So, you know, the Washington football team are a classic example. Their last five games of the season are all divisional games. So that's that. This is the time of year, and the NFL deliberately load up those division games at the back end. You know, and it's tough to stay across all of them, but Game Pass is a perfect way to do that.
And also, when you think about it, for someone like me, who's not really staying up late, because I'm not that passionate about it, although I'm getting there, is that you can watch everything live and on demand on Game Pass, which is a big plus. But also with the Red Zone, with the playoff spots coming up, you can be jumping around all the different matches.
Yeah, I'll tell you what they do as well on Game Pass, which is really good, is that sometimes, you know, if you go on to social media and you're trying to look for highlights and you kind of, in the tag, it might give away what's happened. I think a good thing with Game Pass as well, because if you want, you know, I like to watch the games in 40, but I don't get to watch every single game. But if I can go and watch 5 minutes of highlights as well on a, you know, say it's been a Thursday night football game, I get up Friday morning, I know I don't have time to watch the whole game, I can watch the 5 minutes of highlights. And I can still have that bit, like a bit of a match of the day thing where I don't know, you know, I avoid the score because they don't put the scores on the highlights. So then you get to watch them as if, as they play out. So yeah, just another kind of little piece of the puzzle, which is great as a fan.
Which is great, because last week we had Matt Smith on, and you were both talking about the NFL being like the greatest reality TV show on earth. And if you get the spoilers of any TV show, you don't want to see them. So especially with the scores, right? It makes sense that they do that.
Absolutely. Plus you get, of course, the 24/7 NFL Network coverage from the best in the business. So, yeah, Gary, there's plenty there on NFL Game Pass for people to get stuck into. It's, as you say, a wonderful time.
And there is a price drop for Christmas, so head over to NFLGamePass.com to sign up now and get all your NFL action. Back to the interview, Neil.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
You talked about breaking rules of returns, being a risk taker. What is that? Is that fielding punts on areas of the field where you shouldn't? Give me a couple of examples of where you talked about breaking rules.
So that's definitely one of them. You know, we were always taught to heels on the 10, don't back up. But at some point in the game, like I said, with the guy, you're not going to get many opportunities. Sometimes you got to go outside the box, break a rule to make your own opportunity. So that's one thing. Another thing is a lot of times guys get, if you're not confident or if you don't feel you have the room for error, if a play is called right, most guys are just going to stick it to make it go right because it was called right. I got to a point, if I saw it right wasn't working or right wasn't going to work, I'm going left. Like, I'm going to go left. Like, right is not, I know you call it a wall right, coach. I know the blocking is set up for right, but it's not there. I'm going the other way. And things of that nature is like breaking a rule or, you know, typically they tell you to catch it and just get upfield, right? That's another big thing. Just catch it, get upfield, no dancing. Sometimes you got to dance. You know, sometimes you go straight up, there's three guys there. So those are just some of the nuances of once you get your confidence, once you have room for error, you can like start it where the plan calls for, but then sometimes you got to abort mission.
Definitely. Well, you did that to great success. So this is interesting to me. Let's compare the two. So you break one of those rules as a rookie in 2001. And you break one of those rules as an All-Pro in 2003, what's the coaching reaction?
So 2001, very different. 2001, you're on your way to the sideline, clipboards are being slammed, you see scars on all the coaches' faces, the players are looking at you like, what are you doing? 2003, it's okay, you'll get them next time. You're just human, just remind you that you're human. A lot different, 01 to 03.
Wow. Obviously, you had that game in 2004 against the Chargers. You touched the ball 8 times, 242 yards. You score on a kickoff return touchdown. Is that the sort of game that sticks in your mind, or have you got others that kind of No? What ones stand out for you?
Now, the ones, there are several that stand out for me. One of my favorite games was versus Baltimore. It was, when I say old school 60-70 style run, defense, no one can score. It's 10-10 with 5 minutes to go. And we are playing in Baltimore. And we, you and I spoke about that place. It's a special place. The fans are rabid. Like, it's just an unbelievable atmosphere. Kind of felt like being in a gladiator arena.
In the
Although
arena.
Death is not on the line, but it has that feel.
Yeah.
That's the passion of the fans. That one stands out to me because there was a moment. I actually had a bad statistical game. But at that moment, myself and the special teams crew came through in a game. Another one was versus Oakland on Christmas Day. We all want to go home happy on Christmas. And believe it or not, I don't care how much money you're paid, wins and losses affects how it's going to be after a game. When you go home, you're going to have dinner with your family. Wins and losses matter. Mm. So we're actually winning that game. We're up. And then we on offense, we fumble the ball. We're like a minute to go. We give the Raiders, who was our rival, we give them the ball at midfield. They go down. They take the lead. Well, the special teams and myself, we come through again, save the day. I didn't even score on that particular touchdown. But I just remember at that moment, we saved Christmas by putting our team in position on a huge kickoff return that positioned us to go ahead and take regain the lead. It's games like that that matter to me, Mo, when you have a direct impact on a win and a loss, opposed to having a bunch of stats early in the first half.
Right.
Really wasn't indicative of wins and losses.
So there was a film, Ernest Saves Christmas. There should have been a follow-up, Dante Saves Christmas.
I liked it.
Could have been. So a couple of those big, I'd love to know, because when you mentioned Baltimore then, I'm thinking of the battles and Ray Lewis is on the other sideline. And I mean, who were the guys when you were maybe lining up as a receiver or as, you know, just the ones where you think, well, okay, they've called a slant here and that dude's waiting in the middle. I mean, were they kind of, and not that you'd ever be scared of anyone because you're an elite athlete, you're out there, you're in the heat of the competition, but there must have been players like that where, you know, well, we're in a real battle today because 100%, this guy's playing.
Yeah, scared was never, I never lacked confidence in that realm. Scared was never in my DNA. Aware would be the word. Aware. Oh, this is Champ Bailey lined up for me now. And it's third down. And it's at a pivotal moment. And they've called a stop and go. And I got to beat him. Or a slant, like you said. Or I've had some times, I have a slant. And I know Ray Lewis is right there in the middle waiting. But I have to run this at this particular angle that's going to take me right at him. Or a guy by the name of John Lynch. I'm running a vertical route up the seam. And I know this guy is a headhunter, right?
Yep.
So there are definitely players that you're like, okay, you got to really be focused on this particular play because you're dealing with an all-pro, a perennial all-pro, a future Hall of Famer. Your technique and your mechanics have to be on point right here.
Fantastic. Dante, because we're friends, I'm not even going to mute anymore. So my other dog, my one dog was barking. The other one's doing that thing, you know, where they like chase rabbits in their sleep?
Uh-huh.
She's like, she keeps yelping now. So I'm just going to give up. We're just going to chat and the dogs can be a part of this conversation.
Yeah, because of course. He's trying to chime in. Maybe the dog is trying to chime in.
I think
Neil,
ask this. You got better questions than that, surely. What was it like? Again, some of those big plays you make at Arrowhead. I think about the Chiefs fans and what's that moment like? Because sometimes players say, oh, I don't notice the fans, or you play, and I feel like it would be impossible to ignore the fans in Kansas City.
It depends on their fan base, exactly. It depends on the fan base. Maybe you don't know the fan, notice the fans because they're just not into it. And there are stadiums like that. Arrowhead is a special, special place. And there were a couple of moments that you definitely noticed and felt the change within the fan base. One, the Denver game. You can actually hear it. If you have any clip of that and it's just a game telecast and not like a highlight show or anything, the actual game, you can hear it once I break. Another one of my favorite was in a playoff game against the Peyton Manning-led Indianapolis Colts. I took one to the house. Those particular instances, I completely noticed as I was running there.
While you're
like,
doing
as it. I was running, you could hear it. Like, and it, because the fans have a unique bird's eye view.
Yeah.
So they know as a player, you're on the field, it's a lot chaos, it's a lot going on.
They know you're gone.
In the clear, they know you're gone. So you can just tell by the reaction of the fans, like, oh, you're gone. You're broken. Those two instances are my favorites.
And what's the adrenaline like? Is it almost like an out-of-body experience? What's it like when that happens? You forget what you've done. Because sometimes you hear people say, well, I don't actually know what I did after I scored because I don't remember.
That's true. A lot of times I had to go back and watch it on video, watch it the next day in film practice, be like, oh, now I get it. You feel it. You haven't. Somewhat of an idea, but you don't have a complete understanding until you go back and watch every little nuance of the particular play.
When you were in the middle of kind of growing to become this force of a player, you know, you're on the all-decade team for the 2000s. That's history. That's your part. You can't tell the story of the 2000s without you being a part of it. That's what that means. That's what that is. Was there ever a part when you were in it where you're thinking, yeah, I was a quarterback as a little kid. Then I had to go to Scotland. And then I'm on the Letterman show. I mean, what happened there? First of all, what happened there? Well, how did that happen?
Just, man, one thing about success, you know, Neil, when you have any success in any type of field, people come from all different angles. And it was just crazy at the time. It started with Dion, and then it's the Letterman show. And then it's Gatorade commercials. And then I did one with Don Cheadle. It just keeps going. And Coach Ramil did a great job of saying, remember what got you all of this. Stay focused. This is the reason why. And he was a great force in my life because I didn't have a dad at the time. Had my mom, you know, my mom is, oh, you're my baby, you did it. Coach Ramil was on the other shoulder like, hey. Get back to practice. Don't forget what got you here. So it was a crazy, crazy time for sure. Things were coming, opportunities that is, were coming like from all angles. And it was a delicate balance.
Yeah.
I got to feel a microcosm of what it was like to be a rock star. I always say, man, this is what rock stars deal with every day. I had a window to feel. And I can tell you this, Neil, no thank you. No thank
you.
No, thank you.
No, because I was going to ask, Dick Vermeil obviously won that battle then because you are very humble. You are very down to earth. And I guess, but I guess you saw a glimpse into it and you can see probably how some people may have their heads turned and then take their eye off the ball quite literally.
100%.
Which is what got them there.
100%. Because you're getting pulled so many directions. I don't think it's necessarily not being humble. I just think if you start taking, which is human nature, at advantage of every opportunity that comes your way, then that's going to take away from your film time, your rest, eating properly, all these little nuances that go into performing well on game day. Now you're taking away because you're shooting a commercial or you're up late doing this event or you're traveling, going to take advantage of this opportunity. Now all of a sudden, all the things that I mentioned, you're not doing, and then it affects you on the field.
We'll talk about him in a second, Patrick Mahomes, because I know you watch him. You're at all the games at Arrowhead. But actually, I remember speaking to Lee Steinberg, and he said Patrick didn't have any endorsements or any commercials his first year in the NFL. Just let it be about football, right? Let it be about football, and then you can grow from there. How hard was it then at the end of your career? Obviously, you were there in Kansas City for 7 years, and you just talked about how special the fans are. To go to the Rams, what was that like for the last couple of years?
That was like going from the penthouse to the outhouse. And I literally, in St. Louis, for the first time in my life, lost the desire and love of the game because I had played in Texas. I don't know if you know about high school Texas football, premier.
Right.
I go to Texas A&M, football. Culture, it's all about football. Go to Arrowhead, all about football. Now, all of a sudden, I'm in a baseball town. I'm in a town that is on the cusp of losing an NFL team. That should tell you everything.
Right.
They just were not into it. The fan base was not into it. It was a baseball town. The organization was not what I was used to. And I probably could have played another 3 years after 9 years. So I played nine. I probably had 10, 11, 12 years in, but my desire to play was zapped in St. Louis. That was how big that drop off was, going from Arrowhead, the Chiefs organization, to the Rams organization at that time. Just a huge drop off.
Wow. Just wrapping up your career, what did it mean to be in that all decade team? You know, and again, when you're in the middle of your career, Pro Bowls are nice and All Pros nice for confidence, but then you just keep moving. The train doesn't wait. You just keep playing, you keep practicing. But for something like that, that award, which you can now look at and be part of a decade-long team, what does that mean now?
Everything. It means everything because, yes, sure, we like the money. Sure, we like the notoriety. All of that is great. But more than anything, I think the majority of athletes, they want appreciation because it's hard work to get to the NFL level. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of days. You know, people look at the end result a lot. Oh, you're the X factor. You have this commercial. You met this person. You want to, but they don't count in the hot summer days in junior high. You're not getting paid a dime. They don't count the high school days. Like, it's about 10 to 12 years of not making a dime, right, of basically becoming a master at your craft. So, yes, once you get to the NFL level, everything comes to fruition and you're able to cash in on all of that effort. So when it's all said and done, to be appreciated and for a select group that you respect to say, hey, you were one of the best for a decade, that money can't buy that. Money can't buy that. So for me, it's one of the greatest accomplishments. And I'll tell you this, after football, it helps because you realize, wow, I set out at a young kid, 10, 11, 12 years old, put all my heart, effort, and time into this, and look what happened. So now in your new endeavors, you have a blueprint. It's going to be some challenges. It's going to be some bumps in the road. It's going to be some ups and downs. So it allows you to, when you go have new endeavors, to have a blueprint to just keep moving forward to whatever you're trying to do after football. That's the greatest thing.
Yeah, deal with that environment, changing environments, challenges. Last two. Did I'm just curious. Did you ever, you said you could hear the crowd. So sometimes you, did you ever hear the frustration of guys you'd left in the dirt behind you? Because you were just, sometimes you would just, we've shown some of the clips on Sky Sports. You know, you'd start one way, then back up 5 yards and everyone should have been tackling you at that point. And then off you go for, did you sense the frustration and fear from the opposition at times?
Yes, because after my success in 02 and 03, I definitely started noticing unique game plans to keep the ball out of my hand. So it was respect on one side, like, oh, wow, they don't even want me to have the ball. They're kicking it out of bounds.
Right.
They're kicking it high and making it, you know, hang to where I have to affect it. They're squib kicking it. My uncle once said, dude, I never even heard of a squib kick. Until you came in. What the hell is a squib kick? So all of these things were respect on one hand, but frustrating on the other hand. But I definitely noticed, okay, like, they're really game planning to take me out of this competition.
Yeah. Last one then. What's it like to be around it now? You know, obviously you get into broadcasts of games and your career is bringing you now across the pond and different opportunities that you don't have before. But I'm fascinated to know what you think of this current Chiefs team. You get to go back to all the home games as an ambassador for the team. You know, you see Patrick Mahomes in the flesh every week. I mean, what a treat. What's your thoughts on that?
The other treat is Tyreek Hill too. Don't sleep on Tyreek Hill.
Yes, you were the first. Like, you gave them the idea for Tyreek Hill, I think.
Maybe. Drafted in the same round, same stature. I think they was like, hey, let's try that. Let's try getting the little guy again.
That
worked out okay. But it's fascinating to be around it all now because it's like you can relate to this. We were all kids at once. Now we have kids. So we know every little nuance of life that they're going through. It's the same thing going back. It's like, I know what Tyreek Hill is going through. I can, like you just said, Patrick Mahomes, no endorsement year one. I was in that boat. Then all of a sudden, then you got a new kid, endorsements everywhere, you're in every commercial. So it's just funny to see how these guys navigate, especially with social media and all of this stuff on top of that. So when I go back, I can always relate. You know, some people can sympathize. I can sympathize and empathize. Because it's like deja vu watching this current Chiefs team and what the players are going through compared to what we went through in 02, 03, and 04. So it's a trippy feeling, man. It's like watching your kids grow up.
When you're watching, do you just enjoy it or do you miss it? Or do you say, oh, my time's done, I'm good? Or do you still have that little kind of...
Oh, I still, go here, break there. What are you doing? Take advantage of it. I'm like a coach, like the passion comes out. No, I'm just not sitting back watching. I'm like totally into it. It affects me when we win or lose for a little bit. And then I look at my kids and my wife, I'm like, okay, it's more important things in life. But it still affects me as if I'm playing. Like I am truly tied to the Chiefs organization. They have given me opportunities in life that I wouldn't have. So I'm super appreciative. I'm still a part of the organization. So because of that, I think my passion still runs deep with them. So I'm just not a sideline fan. No, I feel like I'm part of the team still.
So there's my conversation with Dante Hall, quite the journey from the Scottish Claymores to being on that all-decade team of the 2000s for the NFL, a star for the Kansas City Chiefs. So let's go into the mailbag then, bring in producer Gary Hayes. How are you, Gary?
Hello, Neil. I'm coming at you with some Matt Smith sweet jazz.
No, it doesn't work for you, Chad. You are not Matt Money Smith. Like, definitely not.
Last week, we didn't do a mailbag, and I was kicking myself because I was like, oh, I wanted to do a Matt Smith British jazz on the radio coming at you with the Los Angeles Chargers.
Why do you think we didn't do a mailbag?
Because you knew I was going to do that.
I sensed where it was going to go. Yeah, got it out the way quick. Avoided the situation. So what we got?
Well, other than my sultry tones right there, I've got two questions, Neil, to make up for there being none last week. So the first is from Scott Brown on Twitter, whose handle is Scotty Brun. So I'm not sure if he's Scottish or not, but Scott, maybe from Scotland, says, Neil, who is the best player you've seen live?
I've seen the GOAT, Tom Brady, playing in Super Bowls, so that's a very obvious one. And I'd even say actually the greatest Brady performance I saw was in a losing cause in the Super Bowl, end of the 2017 season against the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a game with over 1,000 yards of offense, just one punt, I think, in the whole game. Eagles kept scoring and Brady kept responding. You know, he just wouldn't go away. He just looked like a proper champion. So that would be one. I would say Randy Moss was one of the most dominant players I saw. I was at Lambeau Field in Green Bay in his rookie season, 98, and he was just unstoppable, uncoverable, the wide receiver for the Vikings. That was his rookie year. And I saw him play again in 2007. I was in Miami on a press trip, and the Patriots played the Dolphins. I think the Patriots won something like 45-7. Tom Brady was just throwing up passes into triple coverage to Randy Moss. He caught one touchdown with three defenders around him, and he just jumped the highest. So he was just dominant. He just stood out. And then on a lesser level, the most dominant player who's head and shoulders above those he was playing against was Lawrence Phillips in NFL Europe. He had a troubled career and a troubled life. He's gone now. He died. But Lawrence Phillips, I don't think he wanted to be in NFL Europe, but he was way better than the competition, and he just stood out head and shoulders above anyone else. So those are three that kind of spring to mind. But Brady is the obvious one. You know, Brady's the greatest player in NFL history, and I've been fortunate enough to see him play several times, a couple of times here in London and in Super Bowls.
So you mentioned NFL Europe there, which is sort of a nice segue into our next question, because and obviously in this episode, Dante Hall played in NFL Europe and then went back to the NFL, properly and made his name. So this is a question from actually a friend of the podcast, Neil, Rakesh Pradhan. Now, Rakesh and I met before when we did a previous podcast together, and I had a little chat with him outside one of the London games at Spurs. So hello to Rakesh.
One of your fans. He's one of your fan club.
He's one of your fans, Neil, not mine. I can't say he's one of mine.
He's not one of Gary's geezers or something. Yeah.
No, Gary's geezers is strict membership. Only Mark in Lydon and the others are allowed.
There's only a few. Yeah, they have to buy you a drink to get into your fan club.
Get me one drink and then you come in.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad we got a question from a fan. Always
nice. What's so Rakesh says, this is an interesting question, actually. Every week we're seeing multiple teams with multiple injuries with replacements not ready to take on the roles. Would a feeder league like baseball, I think he's talking about the minor leagues there, help get players pro ready, especially those on practice squads who get no meaningful snaps? Interested to hear your thoughts. And I am too.
Yeah. So from a pure football, so from a business point of view, the NFL Europe being closed down and the NFL playing games in London internationally, and now looking at what they're doing with Germany, that was absolutely the right decision, 100% the right decision. Look at how the game's grown in the UK. Look at how the game's going to grow internationally moving forward with regular season games. So that's not the, and that's not the issue. That's not the question here. I understand that. But from a football development point of view, I've not met anyone, players, coaches, general managers, who didn't think NFL Europe was a good idea. And players slip through the cracks. Players can get injured at various times. Players don't get opportunities. We've interviewed many of them on this podcast. Ryan Jensen, you know, Austin Eckler, Philip Lindsay, D'Ernest Johnson. D'Ernest Johnson played in a spring league and a minor league to get his opportunity to get back with the Cleveland Browns. So we're seeing a few of these pop up and then go away again. We had the XFL come back. We have had the Alliance for American Football, which is where D'Ernest played. The USFL is an old iteration. It was a league in the 80s. That's going to start up in 2022. So basically, and the NFL teams, while it's not officially supported by the NFL as an NFL league, you know, games have been shown on NFL Network. We've had certainly general managers will be picking up players from those teams. Taylor Heinicke is a quarterback now for Washington, starting, was in one of those spring leagues with the St. Louis Battlehawks not that long ago. So it's absolutely necessary. Now, whether it's an official NFL tie-in or not, there needs to be something like that to give players an opportunity to get back in. NFL Europe was especially valuable for offensive linemen, and you need to go through a lot of them, and for quarterbacks. The only way you can really test a quarterback is in a game situation. So 100% there needs to be something. And NFL Europe always was a place where you could find out if people couldn't play as well. So teams would send backup quarterbacks who were on decent money, and if they failed, then they weren't on their teams anymore. So you could save yourself money that way. So 100% there needs to be more than just NFL training camps to show your worth. You need to be able to go and play somewhere and play games. So I'm glad that some of these leagues are sort of trying to come back and trying to make it work, because the NFL coaches and general managers, they will take players from these leagues 100%. The difference, and this is the major difference, where it needed to be or needs to be an official NFL tie-in, is if you're a young player already on an NFL roster, you're not getting an opportunity to showcase yourself in the developmental league. Whereas NFL Europe back in the day would take the third string quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, the third string running back, you know, the fourth wide receiver on the roster, the fifth or sixth defensive lineman, players who are never going to get to play, but they used to come to Europe and play. So that's one thing where they still won't solve that issue. Young players already on teams' rosters won't get that much experience, so you need to have it be an official thing.
Oh, interesting response, Neil. I went on for longer than I thought, but it's very interesting
time,
stuff. No,
I?
But it was good. It was good.
Another podcast,
I was going to ask as well, though. Like, I know the players look at NFL Europe and thought maybe, you know, they're taking a step down, but at the same time, it's such a great life opportunity, because you think about Dante in this episode and the way he had that experience of living in Scotland, but being around Europe, and the travel that they get to do is still a life experience as much as a professional one.
Yeah, I think it was very much in my experience. Some guys didn't want to be here at all. You know, you say life experience, but you get one day off a week. You know, you're living in a team hotel for 12 weeks or 11 weeks. You know, that's fine if you're winning. If you're 0-5 and the season's gone down the pan and you've got 5 or 6 more weeks to live in Dusseldorf or Scotland or somewhere you don't want to be and it's a bit alien to you. Yeah, look, a lot of people thrived and they really used it to their advantage. I actually think if a spring league come back, an NFL developmental league, it should be based in the US now. There's no need for it to be based over here in Europe. We have the regular season games. You know, we have all the London games. We're going to have games in Germany soon. So, you know, put six teams in Florida, let them all play in the same place, and just use it as a development league or wherever you want to play them. Put them in Vegas or whatever. I don't know. But you don't need to have it in Europe anymore.
And as we found out with Dante as well, it produces good podcast content about 15 years later.
It does, absolutely. It's always good. Everything comes around. So it was good. And hopefully everyone enjoyed that chat with Dante. And Gary, the Magical Mystery Tour will continue next week.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you bringing? But clearly you don't know, I won't ask and waste my breath.
No, I won't tell you. I've got a couple of asks in with active players, trying to work around their bye weeks and when they've got a bit of free time, and a couple of media guys as well who I go way back with. So, we'll be back with more on the Neil Reynolds podcast very soon, but it will be good stories being told. That's what we can always guarantee. So, my thanks to you, Gary. My thanks to Dante Hall. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Tell your friends. Leave us a nice rating. And we'll speak to you next time. Bye for now. Listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.